Support for KMUW's Into Music podcast comes from McClelland, reminding listeners that Frank Sinatra coined the word skibbity in Strangers in the Night, which you can listen to in their downtown Wichita showroom. More info on McClelland's innovative sound, lighting, and video technology can be found at maxsound.com.
Hi, I'm Jed Budwin, and you're listening to Into Music from the KMUW studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network. My guest on this episode is singer-songwriter Robert Diebel. The Seattle-based musician's latest LP is The Space Between Us, a collection of songs which find Diebel meditating upon the differences and spaces between human beings at the present moment. Buoyed by a sense of hope, Diebel offers listeners a chance to contemplate their place in the world and find meaning within that. We spoke about the album's themes, Diebel's relationship with his fellow musician Stephen Hodges, and how small musical gestures can sometimes become the most important ones. That's Robert Diebel on Into Music coming up now. From what I understand, this is like something that kind of starts, the material starts emerging around 2020, around the pandemic. As you were starting to write that, were the themes that are evident kind of already coming in place, like the sense of separation and isolation and so forth?
Yeah, I think so. You know, some of these songs were written prior to that as demos. And then you start to realize as you're writing more that there is a theme you hadn't even really connected before that was in that material as well. It was unconscious, right? Versus a conscious theme. So that's what keeps me from doing rock operas, is I basically stay unconscious. But yeah, you know, it's like both Orphan Song and Pleasure to Burn were written prior as part of the Bushwick Book Club here in Seattle, where you take a book and write a song about it. And one was dealing with kind of authoritarianism and the breakdown of relationships that come in as a result of that. And the others was an example of really having a passion so great for something beautiful, but then it throws you out of balance to where you become a workaholic to that passion, and then your relationships break down. So that theme of kind of breakdown started to emerge, I think, probably as we're sitting in the pandemic and wondering, thinking a lot and meditating a lot, because it's all we could do.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I wonder too, if some of that, there's that obvious setting for it, right? Which is that, yes, we're separated and things like that. But I also wonder, too, if some of that is just kind of life. Like at a certain point, we start recognizing, like, yeah, I don't really jive with those people, or this isn't as important as it once was, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a settling, I guess, a good kind of settling. Not a get old, get off my yard type of settling, but, you know, kind of a coming to realize who you are and where you thrive and where you know, the people that you really bring more life to your life and those that don't. And I think that, you know, the last song I wrote on the album was a kind of tied that bow, if you will, to that positive sort of thing, you know, outlook, and that was The Forest from the Tree, where I just realized, you know, to be in a coterie of people that really are encouraging and thoughtful and artistic and just authentic, that's where I thrive, and that's where I can regain, or we can regain, some of what we've lost if we are to have a bit of a lament for, you know, what we've been through together.
So, and I apologize, I meant to look this up. So the book that inspired that, the title of it was...
The Hidden Life of Trees.
So is this the book that, where part of it is the mentioning of how trees, for instance, can communicate with each other through the root systems and... Okay.
I'm not sure how to pronounce his last name. It's German. Peter Wollenberger, I think. Or I could be butchering it, but he was an arborist, and he just had these wonderful observations of how science and nature worked in a forest and how it was very much like communities, human communities. And it's a very, it's a lovely book. It's almost meditative in very short little chapters, but it really reminded me of the beauty of human relationships and the way that nature kind of echoes that. I like it when things sort of kind of have a are in concert there, you know. It makes me think like maybe there's purpose to what we're doing. So.
Sure. Well, and I don't know about you, but I think specifically during 2020, 2021, and since less so, but definitely in a very concentrated way in those times, I became very much more aware of nature again because suddenly I had time to take the dog for a walk in the park or walk down by the riverbank, sit outside at night because it didn't matter if I was up at 9 in the morning for work, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah, I think you're onto something there. I think that there was sort of a, I think the pandemic helped us appreciate some of the things that we had maybe taken for granted, like the world we live in or nature, but also, boy, relationships really mattered during the pandemic. I remember our neighbors next door to us, we had only sort of briefly gotten to know them. In our busy lives here in Seattle, but during the pandemic, we had, I think we called it 5 foot beers together, and we just let our kids play together as we, he, my neighbor brew beer, and so he would bring out his latest craft, and then we'd watch the kids play, you know, in the backyard and have our 5 foot distance beers together with him and his wife. And it just reminded you how grateful you were for human connection, where before you just kind of took it for granted.
I came to know a couple of the clerks at my neighborhood convenience store very well, probably better than I ever would have otherwise, you
Yeah.
know. Because they're like, "Oh, you're coming back for another pack of gum." Yeah. Just need somebody to talk to.
There's a deep joy in that, and getting to know people and taking the time to dwell with them. It's, I think we forget that in our highly technical world that we live in.
So as this theme kind of starts to emerge subconsciously, then you're sort of aware of it and making these connections and so forth. What are some of the things that you're learning in this process, do you think?
You know, just how assumptive we are. And if we kind of lower those assumptions, how much we learn from each other. And that can be a real vulnerable place to be. But also if we take that risk, how rewarding it is. Even playing in a band and you know, here in Seattle, my players are more like a community than a band. And I think that's because I think everybody's struggling so hard to live in such an unaffordable city that we all have to be in a million different bands as players to sort of make it work. And so landing a gig involves a spreadsheet. Especially the larger band that you have, the bigger the spreadsheet, right? Like who's, you know, who's not playing on this night with someone else and that kind of stuff. But it also really opens you up to playing with some of the most, you know, really bad, you know, great players in town. But then really also flipping that switch to like, who am I working with and what are their stories? And especially given that we don't get together every single weekend and just jam, and somehow that becomes a band. It has to be, you know, we're very intentional. So how do we also be intentional about our lives and being vulnerable enough to really engage with each other and know each other well and form those kind of bonds. And again, I think it goes back to your thoughts around the pandemic, that was a lesson, I think, that we gained at the pandemic moving forward.
There is something about, I mean, it's funny in bands, right? Because over the years, I've been struck by sometimes you can have a band that, a group of four or five people who've been together for 10 years and like they don't know anything about each other's parents, really. It's like, oh, you've got a brother, that kind of thing. And that's a really, I mean, I suppose in life, that's okay. You don't need to know everything about everybody. But I would think in an intimate setting like that, making music, it probably can only help in some ways.
I think so. Yeah, I think to be known and to know and to protect the safety of that, I think is really important. I think it people feel a deeper connection that way. And there's so much of that that's pulling us apart that I think the more we're kind of oriented towards that, the more little pockets of healing we might be able to encounter. Yeah, it's tricky business when, because everybody's going through a lot of stuff in life, and you never know, how much am I oversharing? Am I undersharing? But you're also interested in other people, but you don't want to pry. And it's like, really, music is ultimately to me relationships, and that's what I probably get the most excited about. Terms of playing all these years and all the different records and all the relationships that they represented.
This is a just sort of a random thought, but maybe it also ties in with the relationships in music. I was just thinking about how in my own life I am much more forgiving of people who I met when I was very young as we've become adults and the differences. It's like we don't have to have the same ideas about religion, or we don't have to have the same ideas about economics or relationship with work, right? But people I've met since, let's say, my late 20s till my early 50s, it becomes harder to forgive those things.
Yeah, I wonder what that's about. I concur with you on that. I recognize that too. And I wonder, I don't know if part of that is just the polarization that we've moved towards in our lives, our society, whether, maybe even technology has moved us in that direction. But you're right, there's a distinct sort of, if we stop to think about it, there's kind of a distinct difference between people that we grew up with that may be very different than us, and yet there's just not such a hard split around them versus new relationships that we might have now and our determination for everything to be like-minded. I think there's comfort in having things like-minded, but then also I don't think we grow very well when we're just, that's how cults get started, right?
I don't know. Maybe those early relationships were bonded by the trauma of dodgeball or something, right?
Yeah.
It's
Or the awkwardness of adolescence or whatever. Yeah. But shared life experience, I think, is a metabolizer to our positions in life. I'm aware that I've had some interesting interactions on social media because I have been pretty upset around the current administration's cruelty towards certain groups of people. And then I'll, naturally, if I say something or make a comment or whatever, I try to keep it to just one social platform so the rest of them are, Then, people that I know will jump all over me for how they feel differently, and it'll get very heated. And often I will find a way of connecting with them offline. I'll take it offline with them. And then the next thing you know, we're talking about how their parents are dying or how they've just been diagnosed with a horrible illness that they don't know they're going to recover from. And it's like, suddenly, everything about that conversation is different. And I've had once, one or two of them just say, gosh, I guess I'm going through so much hard stuff right now. I think I was projecting that onto your comments. And I didn't even say it, but I thought it was really wise of them to make that acknowledgement. But it just, what it did is it showed me how, everything's a tip of an iceberg, and we go down below it. There's real life is really happening there, in which our engagement to people and the emotions that we have for them are very, very different than at the top of the tip of the iceberg, where we're just pissed off that they're not as pissed off as we are, or whatever. Yeah, it's very apparent, when you look, especially at social media, how if you truly do know someone, it does change kind of the narrative. The space between us does change. Not always. Sometimes I've just had to kind of take a few steps back because it's exhausting. But yeah, I always remain hopeful that we will get back to the things that really matter in living in this life, and all that we all have to deal with, that shared experience will somehow find its way back. But we'll see.
I wondered about the music itself, which has this still quality to it. Solemn isn't the right word. I think still is the correct word, just as when I'm in the presence of it. Can you do you know what I'm saying? And can you talk a
Yeah.
little bit about that?
I've often wondered about it because I've been influenced by people, but I never set out to write like someone. And it's interesting because in a way I was sort of I didn't have a wide landscape of influences. I think I was, like most people my age, I was influenced by the Beatles and a few others. But as I started to put out my records, I would get reviewed. They reviewed me to these other people, and I would go, who are they? And I would go to those other people, and I would fall in love. I was like, I feel known. I feel seen. I feel less lonely. I remember, my first album, some reviewers likened it to Nick Drake, and I think maybe you'd have to be in the early mid 90s for that to make sense, because everything was so loud, and but my stuff didn't sound like Nick Drake, but there was a quality there that they picked up on. But man, the moment I heard Nick Drake, I'm like, oh my God, it's like taking an anti-anxiety pill, and I felt so still and calm. And I'm like, that's what I was trying to achieve, I think, as a writer. And I think it probably, going back to your question, I think it probably comes up from growing up in a very busy home with busy parents that probably put me into every activity they possibly could. And I just wanted to be still. And maybe I'm a little ADD or something in life. And so the idea of being still really connects with me. I long for it. And I think I long to be around people who are more introspective and more reflective, because I love the stillness within them. So that's something that I think I've kind of wondered about myself over the years, that there's just sort of a, it's not something that I strive to do, like, oh, I'm going to make another still record. It's just something that comes out. And in some ways, I pay a little price for it, because it doesn't always put you at the top of the listening shelf when you do. But I think it does. I do get a lot of really dear comments from people that form relationships, I think, over the years because of it. But same thing with Leonard Cohen. Someone introduced me to him probably just before my second album, and that I was just vexed by the way that you didn't even need the music. You could just read the words, and you go on a journey with the words. The way he would flip images around was so enticing and surprising and It just sort of connected with a deep part of me. So I think it's sort of an accidental thing of kind of bumping into something that's a part of you and having maybe words for it.
The musicians that you've worked with over the years, and I think of like Stephen Hodges, I think of like Victor Kraus, of course, on the new record. Those would be people who would get that kind of thing, right?
That would do what?
That would get that kind of thing, like that sense of stillness and that kind of intuition in it. So is it easy to find players like that, or do you just kind of
Put out a giant Craigslist ad for people that are really into space. So now you're kind of getting into some of my origin stories. You know, when I first was doing my first record, I had this thing I couldn't quite describe, and I wanted to do it with strings, and I did not want a full drum set. I wanted percussion, and it was all very vague in terms of my creative idea. And I had a group of string players that was, you know, making this thing happen for me. And we were going into the studio trying to make this record, but it was a mess, you know, and I was trying to arrange stuff, and I'm not quite proficient at that, but you know, was making it work. And after two or three studios, one of the main guys that was has always been pretty pivotal in a lot of my music, Antoine Arbisu, said, you know, I want to introduce you to a friend of mine, Stephen Hodges. I think he ought to produce this record. And I'm like, okay. And so Hodges kind of became one of my first mentors. It was really more feel than anything else. You know, we'd get together over at his place, and we would kind of roughly chart out that first record, and he would get really obsessed with moving one section to another section. Maybe it was a bridge to a chorus or something, and he needed a tie-in there. And I remember he said at one point, he was thinking, he's like, what we need is a conga. And I'm like, conga? I don't have any of Latin America going on in this album. Where are you getting? He goes, no, a giant stick against a conga. And you know, like he had a whole other way of thinking. But just to lock it into this next thing, I don't know if we ever did that or not, but it kind of invited me into that expansive creative landscape of his mind of how do we think about space and how do we make enough room in this material so that everything feels authentic and solid. And I learned a lot from just kind of being in that. And I think it really shaped the way I kind of looked at other records. And I think every producer or musician that I've worked with since has brought something to the table that I've learned from. But that was one of the first things about not necessarily showing off or trying to be the best or any of that, but just literally being authentic and allowing the rawness of what you're trying to convey and creating enough space in that to inhabit the song. So that's how that kind of started. And you know, I met Victoria Williams that year as well, and that was just a fluke. I think I just wrote her a letter because I was a fan, and she lived in LA, and we hit it off and did a duet together, and we're still really good friends. And then from there, just each basic producer that I would work with or studio that I work with, we'd run into other people that we would make room for on the album and see what they would bring to it. And that's kind of how some of that ended up happening. They're all relationships now. Victor is one person I haven't had the chance to actually meet. He was someone that Rich has a good friendship with Rich, and that happened unfortunately while I was not in the studio. So I wish I had met him, but pretty much everybody else I've formed some pretty good relationships with and stay in touch.
Still amazing how given that you haven't met, then that makes it, I don't know, maybe that makes it more interesting the way that he fits in there and seems to, you
It
know.
is because he's such a primary part of this album. He really locked that album in We were struggling for a while to get that conga slap, if you will, on this record to tie all the pieces together. And I think Rich would say the th same thing. Once we landed Victor on the tracks, he really, you could just tell he absorbed the material and really leaned into it. And the moment we all heard the tracks, we're like, yes, that is what we were looking for. That now we know where we're going. And so to your point, there are those types of players that are more artists than players, and they bring an artistic element to the work that then sends in its own direction, just like Hodges sent those first two records in a really interesting direction. And then from there, it's like follow. It's like someone that's writing a piece of fiction, and the characters, they start taking over the book. And in a way, you have to allow space for that new narrative to sort of play out. Yeah, so that's been one of the richest things I've enjoyed over the last 25, 30 years of making records, is what different people bring to the albums.
You've been listening to a conversation with Robert Diebel. His new album, The Space Between Us, is out now. You can learn more about him at his official website, robertdiebel.com, and find The Space Between Us on digital streaming platforms and Bandcamp. You can learn more about this podcast and all programming on our station by visiting our website, kmuw.org. Send us your questions and comments at info@kmuw.org and find all the latest programming notes on that website as well. As always, we like to remind you that our theme music is composed and performed by Torrin Anderson. We'll see you next time.